equine supplement company in the industry. Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Well, the bright lights in the big city take a back seat during the summer. That's true of Saratoga, with action moving from Long Island here upstate, and true of Del Mar, where they take leave of L.A. and move the scene to Del Mar. But nowhere is it more true than at Colonial Downs, where you are absolutely in the most gorgeous countryside you're going to find as you head toward Williamsburg and outside of Richmond, Virginia, and the purses and everything that you would want, the fabulous turf course, nothing wrong with the main track, and Jill Byrne has been presiding over the refashioned Colonial Downs operation, and it's really become a highlight of the summer calendar, and it's going to be a full, complete season this year. Jill, good morning, happy opening day.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, happy opening day. Doesn't seem like it was that long ago. We were chit-chatting about last year, so it's come around fast, and we're ready to go.
And we should probably talk about the schedule first, because, you know, you made it very clear that there would be, you know, dates added, and as the seasons progress, talk about, basically where the operation stands as we go into this summer and early fall season.
Yeah, we've added six more days, so two more weeks of racing, and we will be racing through Labor Day week, well, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of Labor Day, so that's something new for Colonial Downs. But, so yeah, very exciting for the horsemen to continue to add days, but also to increase the purses as we go along as well. So that's great news for horsemen, and, you know, it's always difficult when you're shipping places and with staffing, so to have those extra 2 weeks makes it certainly more viable on the horsemen.
Well, and you know, knowing, and I saw the piece about the kickoff to the meet and DRF, and the you got to think that with that turf course and with the the luxury of all the turf racing that's available at Colonial, the timing is certainly perfect given a lot of Churchill horsemen that had probably dates circled and spots circled for their horses before the issues kind of came to a head with the grass course. So you seem poised to be the beneficiary.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and a lot of the Kentucky Horsemen and Churchill Horsemen back again this year after coming last year when Churchill Stable Area closed for them to redo the turf course. So they had such a great experience last year, did well. And, you know, word of mouth, that's always your best thing on the racetrack is a positive word of mouth from other horsemen to other horsemen. So, you know, yes, I think the turf course, obviously, with Churchill not being able to have turf racing recently, that certainly has enticed a lot of people here, as well as, you know, our phenomenal main track too, which has just received rave reviews since reopening in 2019. And the stable area, it's a beautiful stable area that we put a lot of effort into, the whole facility. So I think, you know, when people have a good experience, the word gets out, and we look forward to hopefully giving them another fantastic experience this summer.
In terms of the, not just the calendar, but in terms of the stake schedule, in terms of Allison DeLuca's condition book, give us a feel for, you know, how the season unfolds.
Yeah, we've expanded, you know, the stakes schedule a little bit. We added a mile and a half turf race, the Colonial Cup, which should be very popular, and that's on July 24th. We've also increased the, you know, the purse amounts in a lot of these stakes races, up to them each $50,000, so $150,000 for these stakes races. The Virginia Derby's increased by $50,000, the Virginia Oaks. You know, so all of those things where, for horsemen, it makes sense to be able to, you know, really point for these races. Allison writes an incredible condition book. Her entire team is just, to me, you know, second to none what they do in the racing office here. And I think there's something for everybody. So today we kick it off, you know, with the Virginia Breds to, you know, give all of the Virginia people who have worked so hard and put so much effort into getting racing to return to the state of Virginia, and a really great program for them today and throughout the entire meet.
Well, and we'll talk to the Virginia breeders as well as the season gets going. Probably Deb Easter will check in with us, and the Virginia Equine Alliance that made so many smart moves essentially keeping the ball in the air during the, you know, the period where the track was dark, and the ownership that stepped in and refashioned the facility and rededicated to the whole concept of racing and the horsemen, and of course the great heritage of horsemanship in Virginia was at the ready, and you know, here it is. It's kind of shocking, Jill, that this is the fourth year, right? Fourth year. Unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, we had that abbreviated pandemic year,
yeah.
But yeah, fourth year, and you know, we've certainly come a long way in a very short period of time, starting from zero, and what we've accomplished here with an incredible team, a lot of support. So very proud of everything that we've done here at Colonial Downs and Virginia Racing and the Virginia Thoroughbred industry, getting a nice boost. You know, it is the home of the greatest racehorse ever, Secretariat, so need to maintain that high standard.
Well, a couple of things. We'll talk about the horsemen, and we of course, mirthfully christened last year the Summer of Lovell, and Michelle Lovell having an amazing summer, and she brings one of the hotter 2-year-olds to emerge from the Churchill Spring Meet, brings that one down, but we've got so many more. Mike Tomlinson and Tom Vance on hand. I see that Ian Wilkes has got horses. Brett Calhoun, Dallas Stewart, Marcus Hirsch wrote about Chris Block, and of course, you know, you've got refugees from Chicago looking to create a home. And you know, Jill, one thing that you can take credit for too is you know, your your own heritage around the game and your familiarity with all of the regions that a colonial season would draw from. And you've got connections. We just talked about, obviously, about Kentucky, but you've got connections to Chicago as well, and there isn't really anywhere that you can't pick up a phone and you know, either recruit somebody for a steak or suggest to somebody to come and bring a couple dozen.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been blessed in this industry, as you know, born into it, grew up in it, from you know, New York to Florida, California, with my years with TVG as well, and of course Breeders' Cup. So you know, you make a lot of connections along the way, and it's very important to keep, you know, the respect of the horsemen and to always, you know, show them that you try to do right by them, by the horses first. And I think, you know, for me, it's been just maintaining that sort of credibility and reputation, hiring the best people. I have an incredible team. I cannot stress enough, from the racing office to, you know, all the track crew, the valets, the starters, and you name it, from top to bottom, the Virginia Racing Commission with the state vets. You know, it takes an army, as you know. It doesn't matter if you're racing 5 days or, you know, 155 days to do this. And we've got a team of people that are absolutely dedicated to the industry. And, but yeah, you know, this is a tough industry, and more than ever now. So it's very important to put, you know, the horses and the horsemen first, and really try to do your best to put on a safe environment and, you know, have a little fun along the way as well. But I have, you know, been blessed to be in this industry longer than years that I will admit to. and like you said, at every angle, you know, from growing up on the track, from galloping horses, from running a stable to, you know, to broadcast, to now, you know, running a racetrack operation. So you learn it all from the ground up, and I think that helps you at least to try and make the right decisions.
In terms of some decisions, talk about the schedule, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and have there been, you know, after every meet, management sit down and look at handle and look at what went right and what might be fixable or changeable that could improve. Talk about the decision-making process and, you know, sticking with the, you know, the early week, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday slate.
Yeah, you know, I think it all just really, last year was kind of, you know, after the pandemic year, and then last year we really didn't know, you know, what kind of situation we were all going to be in with the pandemic still, you know, raging, for lack of a better word. So the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday last year, it gave us an opportunity to get on a consistent schedule, get a consistent product out there that people were watching, so they kind of, you know that Colonial Downs is back. Here's what Colonial Downs racing is. Get as many eyeballs on it as possible. And also, you know, not go up against the same days that Maryland was running, so that the Maryland riders could come down here. Some of the Maryland staff would come down and support us for the meet. So that was, you know, a big help in working directly with the team up there at Maryland, who, you know, been very supportive as well. And so it just made sense. But I think in the future, you know, we can always look to, you know, what we might be able to adjust or change. You know, is it maybe to go ahead and, you know, do a weekend date, or, you know, some evening racing again? Pretty much kind of the sky's the limit. It's just we all want to make sure we work together with the other Mid-Atlantic jurisdictions specifically for our race schedules, where, you know, we're not all on top of each other all the time. But we'd love to be able to get more people back out at the track, which of course the weekends tend to lend to that. So I think, you know, it's just let's go ahead again this year with our Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday afternoon to continue to establish the racing product for the bettors as well as, you know, everybody, and then look to the future for maybe some other options.
I love it. Let's talk about. I'll handicap with Jessica Paquette in a little bit, but the betting menu, Jill. Let's talk about what the offering. Certainly, the field size is going to be something that everybody's going to appreciate on the horse playing side, and I think you've also maintained you know, a low pricing structure, particularly the pick five.
Yeah, we took the pick five takeout down to 12%.
Nice.
It's such a popular wager, and you know, I think so many times the bettors tend to be overlooked in the process of racing, and so trying to give them something, you know, that would be enticing. And a pick five is such a great wager. We also were able to get the carryover brought into that this year, which we hadn't had previously, which of course is, you know, a no-brainer, especially when you have turf racing in full fields, you tend to get some big prices. So I think both of those combined, you know, will certainly add to the allure of and entice people to wager on Colonial. As you mentioned, full fields. Last year, I think we had the second highest field size, average field size, next to, I think it was Del Mar for turf racing. And, you know, we look to expand our dirt racing as well now that everybody realizes what an incredible dirt track we have. Match Series last year certainly helped recognize that at Colonial, gave us, you know, sort of a profile there with our dirt racing. But yeah, you know, we're trying to always work to increase wagering, increase handle, but also make it, you know, something enticing for the bettors, and looking to do that with the low takeout on the pick five.
It's become such a success really everywhere you look, and it occurs to me to glance at some of the riders, and kind of an interesting mix. Actually, you've got an interesting collection of jocks that have turned up.
We do. We're certainly a melting pot. I think, you know, the clerk of scales, David Heitzman, was telling me, I think we have like 35, 40 different riders in the room today. And that's not even including our steeplechase riders, who will be the first two races. They're non-parimutuel races, but we do run two steeplechase races on Monday before the card. So, you know, when you have 40 different riders in the room on one day, that gives you an idea where they're all coming from.
Well, we're going to talk to Bill Gallo, too, actually, from National Steeplechase and the summer flat season. When we say flat, we mean flat racetracks as opposed to the hunt meets. And we'll get Bill's look ahead to not just today, but to the Saratoga season as well. We'll talk to Gallo. And, of course, if you got the jumps, you got Woodbury up in the stand, up in the steward stand. So all the Virginia faithful are getting together starting today. And you know what? One thing, Jill, we should tell people. I mean, if they have not been to the facility, you know, not just the remote betting, but it's an absolutely gorgeous building and facility for entertaining and for, you know, all the things that come with a great day at the races. Looking forward to being down. I'm going to see you. My God, it's going to be 10 days, basically. I'll be down for
Colonial
Cup. Yeah,
you're going to be here before we know it.
Exactly.
Looking forward to it. Love having you here, and really appreciate all you do for Colonial Downs, for supporting us, and for Virginia breeding and racing as well. So we look forward to hosting you here at Colonial Downs again. I think you should just stay here all summer.
Well, I've taken my share of grief from Andy Serling, who was outraged last summer when I went to Del Mar, to Colonial, and to Monmouth. He's going to be really aghast if I tell him I'm going to Ellis for an outing. That's pretty funny.
Well, you know what you need to do is have Andy come down with you for a Monday, Tuesday at Colonial. We'd love to have Andy Serling here at Colonial on a Monday and Tuesday. You can take a couple days away from Saratoga and go racing. Come on down.
Let me tell you something. If you could figure out a way to pry him out of Saratoga for even two dark days, that would be I suppose if you sent a helicopter to pick him up, he may.
There you go. we'll send the private jet.
Jill, looking forward to getting down there. We'll be there for Colonial Cup Day, and it should be a tremendous season. You know, you mentioned your team. Run down who's involved. And, of course, you mentioned Allison, of course, in the racing office. But we're going to talk to Jessica, but talk about the broadcast team and, you know, the marketing team and everybody that's involved.
Yeah, obviously Allison DeLuca, our director of racing and racing secretary, and she brings so many of her team from Tampa with her, and they're just, you know, incredible at what they do and make my job a lot easier. And then we have an incredible track crew led by our track consultant, Ken Brown, who absolutely, you know, best in the business. And Harrison Young, who is our director of racing surfaces and primarily focused on the turf course. So those are kind of the two main track people. We got Jessica, we got Jason Beam, Beamy on the announcer's mic. It's just too many people to name them all. They're just an incredible group. Our stewards here, led by Jack Houghton for the Racing Commission, are phenomenal. And, it's just, people always say to me, how did you get the team that you get? You've got the best of the best. And, I think they all enjoy being here and enjoy being part of something special. And, we're lucky to have them, because certainly wouldn't want to do it without them. And then, the VHBPA here in Virginia, yep, led by Frank Petromalo, is just, they're incredible. Frank does so many things for the staff, for the horse people on the backside. It's, those are the kind of things that people don't necessarily always see up front, but can't do it without them behind the scenes.
Jill Byrne, everybody, and Colonial Downs, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, 1:45 Eastern kickoff, and a really nice start to the meet. The cards that are up and available, big full fields, tons of turf racing, everything that everybody likes, 12% pick five as well, and that is going to be the last five races, the last five flat races. If you look at a schedule, it's a little confusing. The thoroughbred races start at 1:45. There are the 12:15 and 12:50 jump races on Mondays. Unfortunately, right now, no wagering as of yet in Virginia on the jumps, but that'll hopefully come at some point. We'll talk to Bill Gallo actually about it in hour three. Jill, best of luck, safe meet for
Thank
everybody.
You. Yep. Safety is what everybody is our the bar that we set. So we just wish safe trips for horses and riders and everybody, and do the best we can to provide that.
Jill Byrne, folks, Colonial Downs, it's back, and just tremendous purse structure, and you look at this outstanding opening day and day two. I mean, you look here. Here's the pick fives today and tomorrow. You've got 11 by 8 by 11 by 8 by 12. That's today. Tomorrow's pick five, 12%. 12 by 8 by 9 by 9 by 14 in the nightcap. And, for instance, that whole pick five tomorrow is completely on the grass. Today, I think there's one, if I'm not mistaken, there's one race on the main. Yeah, the first leg is a 7-furlong first level allowance on the main track. Everything else on the grass. So, we love grass racing. We love big fields. We love low takeout. It's all there. It's Colonial Downs. Rich Migliore is going to join us next, and looking forward to catching up with Mig. I forget what happened, but I don't think we talked vacation week. And was it holiday? Whatever. It feels like we haven't spoken to Rich in 3 weeks. I think that is going to be exactly the case, in fact, that we haven't spoken to him in 3 weeks. So it'll all be fresh, and we can bring a bunch of things to the conversation. Let me get ready for some New York discussion as Rich Migliore joins us. And Rich, ready, of course, to bring the whole show up to Saratoga, as well as the rest of the NYRA team, and America's Day at the Races becomes Saratoga Live. But there's plenty of recapping, Mig, to do from Belmont Spring. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it was a terrific meeting, and really excited about Saratoga, obviously. We all, it's like the kid anticipating Christmas, right? Every time we get to opening day, it's like Christmas morning.
Yeah, well, we'll get there, and we'll do plenty of Saratoga previewing. We'll be live at the track Thursday and Friday to kick the season off, but right now, let me catch up with you. We haven't talked. I was saying as we were pulling you up, it feels like I haven't talked to you in a month.
Well, it's been a while. You still look like you had a nice vacation, Steve. That looked like a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. It was just unbelievably fun. Fabulous.
Good, good. You deserve it. Now you got re-energized, put the blinkers on, and a whirlwind of 40 days of the best racing. And but it was, I mean, some of the performances just were breakout. Some of the storylines to me, you know, touched me in different ways. You know, I've just become such a fan of Chad Brown's filly Bleecker Street, because she's one of those horses that just has always been somewhat underestimated, and then every challenge they put in front of her, she steps up, you know, takes another step forward and just handles it. You know, she doesn't find excuses, she finds ways to get it done. The jockey race was sensational. I felt a little bad for Dylan Davis not getting it done. You know, it's just heartbreaking to lead for the majority of the meet and just not quite, you know, they kind of ran out of bullets last week. They were, you know, a lot of the horses they had won on, you know, they got to step up in company, they get tired, and they were riding a lot of long shots the last week. But he, you know, to only beaten one winner, and to be fair, Irad, you know, between traveling and then, you know, suspension from Royal Ascot, and he rode like 100 less horses. So, but, you know, I just know what it's like to be that close and not get it done. You know, told him yesterday to keep his head held high because he should be very proud of the meet he put together.
You touched on a handful of things here, and you know, there's quite a bit going on, I think, with Ortiz, not the least of which the people have noted the lurking presence of Flavian Pratt that got plenty of attention, and it does feel like he, you know, he's kind of hyper-focused himself again, kind of, you know, not that he is not dedicated, you know, without exterior pressures, but it does feel like he got very focused here. You mentioned Chad, you know, wins another training title, and particularly the last few weeks, looking at, because I've got, let's see, I've got the last 3 weeks that I was away, you know, here was Gerrymander winning the Mother Goose, and Eminent Victor winning the Wild Applause. You go back to last weekend, some, you know, assorted successes into this weekend, and McCulloch, the performance in the Belmont Oaks, and in a lot of the storylines going into the 2 mile and a quarter grade ones, Rich, was focused on how, you know, the European contingent looked, you know, unbeatable, and oh, American interests are up against it, and they, you know, they go home, they didn't go home with nothing, but they went home with minor awards.
Well, yeah, listen, you know, turf racing, you think about it in this context. Go back to the early 80s. They wouldn't run turf races on weekends in Saratoga when it was a 24-day meet. So you're talking 8 days where they wouldn't run turf racing on weekends so they could open the infield for fans. Could you imagine no turf racing on weekends in Saratoga now? So my point being that turf racing has become so much more popular, and people have focused now. Like before, it was like, oh, turf was a last resort. We have to go to turf because he's just not that good on the dirt, right? And basically trying something, experimenting. That's not the case anymore. You know, turf racing is just as important as dirt racing, and so therefore our quality of turf horses has gotten better, and. You know, even this pipeline, and some people do it very, very well. Obviously, you know, people connected with Chad Brown, importing horses, knowing what horses will excel with American style racing, be it the pace of the races or the firmer ground.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, so it's just, you know, it's just been an interesting evolution for me to watch it. You know, since I was a kid, basically. And then Todd Pletcher's run he's been on. I mean, talk about coming to life and the horses running great. What about the Charge It's
yep.
Withers?
Yep.
Oof.
Yep.
Dwyer.
Well, Life Is Good as well. And even, you know, even Annapolis wins that Manila. I suppose Dynamic One wins the Suburban. I'm not going to ask you about the situation that transpired with Emmanuel, but it you know, it took an administrative miscue and you know, kind of a barn oversight issue to keep Emmanuel from competing. But otherwise, Todd had a very good spring season downstate.
And briefly, just to get back to what you were talking about with IRAD, that's what great athletes do for themselves and for each other. You know, Flavian Pratt coming in here is going to raise other guys' games because he's that good. And if you are a great rider and a champion and you take pride in what you do, you're going to meet that challenge. You're going to raise your game so that you're, you know, you continue to hold your position, if you will, right? So, you know, that's what I see in this jockey colony, a lot of riders elevating each other's games because they're so good that they have to step up. They can't fudge it. They can't not prepare properly. They better mark all their, you know, dot all their I's and cross all their T's if they're going to keep up in this colony. Otherwise, you will get smothered. I mean, it's as strong a colony. You know, it harkens back to the colony in the 80s, you know, when you had from Angel Cordero to George Velasquez and Mady Maple, Cinto Vasquez, and then all the California riders that would come in the fall, especially Shoemaker, McCarron, Pinkai. I mean, it just one after another. And I had a really good time. I went to Flavian's house after the races. Me, Ernie, Eldon, they set up the cameras, the lighting, and we had a really great sit-down interview with him that will air probably opening week now up in Saratoga, and just getting a little more insight into him. And I came away with such a appreciation. I'm a fan of his as a rider, but such an appreciation of him as a person and just how grounded he is, and professional, but like just a guy who he's got his priorities straight. He's you know, got to meet his wife and his two little ones. It was fun for me. Those are the things that I feel so privileged that I get to do now in, you know, broadcasting, that I get to have these sit down interviews and learn more about the people. And then his harness background, and I won't give too much away, but you know, because the feature will be coming out, but I'll tease it. How's that?
Well, we had a wonderful sit down with him at Santa Anita about, I don't know, it's got to be 4 years ago at least, maybe five. And the harness, it just so happened that, you know, he and his family, they had had a stakes winner that previous week, actually, on the harness side. But it's a big deal, the standardbreds for the Pratt family.
Yeah, and his mother and father are coming over from France to spend the summer in Saratoga. And his father,
nice,
he said, is almost more excited because he wants to go over to Saratoga harness and jog a couple.
Oh, that's funny. I love it. Jumping the bike. You know what that makes me think of? Nobody from the main track stables across the street anymore, do they?
No, I think so. Yeah,
there's a few still.
Yeah, I think Linda had some still, and Mott did last year, and I think even Chad had some over there. I will tell you this: if you've never done it, it's fun to jog in the mornings. You know, when we had the charity race, jockeys versus press. It was me, Jerry Bale. We talked about this. I didn't like the race so much because the horse I had was really tough to handle. But going over in the mornings, and I went and introduced myself to the leading driver at the time, Kim Crawford. And, you know, he put me on, you know, behind horses in the morning on that. They have a little training track that goes through the barn area, and the horses are very relaxed because they know they're not going to do anything serious. You're kind of like going to Clare Court, if you will, right? And it's just fun. I mean, you would like it, Steve.
I think I probably would. I remember JJ telling me the story about him jogging one, and the trainer said to him, don't turn around. Don't let him turn around because they'll take off. And he was curious, so he turned around. He said he couldn't believe how fast they were going.
Oh, and it's amazing how they won't pull going the opposite direction. You turn in the right direction, get tight on. They can really pull. And it's not like riding a horse where you can use your body weight as some leverage. You're seated and you're trying. My chest and arms hurt so bad after I drove that mare in that race because she was so difficult. But in the mornings, I really enjoy. And then, you know, listen, I had a Haflinger mare here that Carmel and I had rescued. And she, you could ride her, but she was better driving. So we got a cart for her. And what I would do is Gabrielle was, you know, little, like 7, 8 years old. I'd wait till she got off the school bus and, you know, and I'd be in the cart with the Haflinger mare. And I'd tell her, like, hey, throw your book bag behind the, we have two pillars at our front gate, behind the pillars, we're going for a drive and we live on a dirt road. We go down 3 miles and it was just fun. I mean, I really, you know, something that I, you know, was involved with as a kid because my first real job with horses was a big farm in Dix Hills, Long Island, and one side was hunter-jumpers, which I wanted to work on, but they put me on the side with the coaching horses for the first few months, and I was with an older gentleman named Mr. Niles, who was an incredible horseman, and I learned a lot, and I learned a lot about, you know, they back horses into the harness, and he could tell you more about a horse's soundness, making them step backwards 4 or 5 steps, than he could if you jogged him on the road. Like it was really eye opening, and I'm glad I have that experience now. Then I was just jonesing to get on the other side so I could get on horses' backs. But you know, so it's just that's what horses do for you. They give you all these different disciplines and you know, experiences and adventures. Whether it's, you know, sitting behind them in a cart or on top of their backs or just watching them.
Well, and you know, when we, for those that caught the reference about horses, thoroughbred horses being housed, there's barns on the backside at Saratoga Harness that basically come to the equivalent of Clare Court. If you've never gone out Nelson Avenue and you know, past the racetrack and you know, further past, you know, everything essentially, you'll see, you know, before the lodge, or whatever. They still call it the lodge?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, you got the old Sanford Barns there, and yeah, then the harness entrance is right past the old Sanford Barns. And that's basically their path. They come through the gate by Clare Court, and then they'll go through the center field of Clare Court, or some guys jog around Clare Court to go train on the main track. But how cool is it, Steve? You go down, Gridley Avenue there, and you know, down by Jimmy Bond's barn and the other private, yeah, barns. You got Roy Lehrman's barn, which I really like his barn. I like the construction of it. It's a nice feel to it. And people riding down the street to go train their horses. And, you know, I imagine on a much smaller level, you know, similar to Newmarket maybe, because it sounds like people ride from their yards all over Newmarket to go to the gallops. So that's obviously on a bigger scale, but you know, just the fact that you got horses being ridden down paved streets, you know, and cars having to yield to that traffic, I can always get a kick out of that.
Well, I have got one story to relay. My late friend Malcolm Soonis, who had Junior and a horse by the name of In Memoriam, and had been at the Oklahoma leading up to the season, and then you know, had to clear out. Jeff Minton, you know Jeff?
Oh, sure.
Jeff was over there. We were all in the Oklahoma until everybody came upstate. So then got moved over to the harness track, and I had never really been there for that. So it was eye opening to me with the mixed breeds. But the most notable at that time, the most notable, and this has got to be 2000, I guess, 2001, 2002. The most notable Saratoga trainer, Naira trainer, that was over there was Rick Violette. And wow, right across the, it was the last barn, basically, on the property. was this collection of, you know, kind of miscellaneous, you know, guys with one, two, three horses. And opposite was Rick, and the horse I got to know because of it was Man from Wicklow.
Oh, wow.
Man from Wicklow. And I'm sure there's a list. Somebody must have a list or know of a list. Harry Rice might be the guy to ask this of. The list of the most prominent thoroughbreds and biggest thoroughbred winners that had to sleep over on the harness track grounds. Man from Wicklow, you know, it's like George Washington slept here. We've got quite a bit of that in Washington County. That'd be actually kind of fun to put a, you know, put a one of those plaques up over certain, some of the stalls over there, you know, so and so, you know, Man from Wicklow. This was his this was his stall, right?
Well, I wish they would do that, all over. You know, like when I was a kid, my boss Steve Gamora had trained for Meadow Stable, so he wound up in the old Meadow Stable Barn where Secretariat and Reaver Ridge were housed when Lucian Lauren had them. And there was carved into the stall, I believe it was stall 7, but I don't remember, to be honest. I could kind of tell you the area in the barn if we were up there. Eddie Sweat had carved in the wall, summer home of greatest horse to ever live, Secretariat.
Wow.
And Tommy Albatroni's in that barn now, and you know, they work on these barns, boards get busted, this and that, and it disappeared. It's not there anymore. Because I looked through every stall after the meet one year. But there should be plaques. Like when I went to Camden, when Kip Elzer had me come down, it was his guest, and I just really loved it. But Mickey Prager Jr. and Sr. came out. Mickey Prager Jr.'s got his barn there and breaks a lot of babies. And Mickey Sr. came out because, you know, I actually rode Sight, who was Swale's sister for him. I won on her for Claiborne Farm, the first time I ever won five races in a day as an apprentice. And they took me to Frank Whiteley's barn, and there's plaques. You know, this was Ruffian's stall. This was Forgo's stall when they wintered here. And you know, and just to have that history, you know, noted and visible for people to know, wow, man, the great horse. And obviously at Belmont Saratoga, we have a plethora of great horses that have been stabled there.
Yeah. Well, you know where they do that, obviously, is for those of you that have been on the grounds, and maybe if you're coming this summer and are looking forward to attending the sale, you walk the Fasig Tipton sales grounds, and there you've got the names of prominent yearlings that had basically, you know, spent 4 or 5 days in that stall. That is maintained at the sales grounds.
That's cool. I mean, Fasig does an amazing job of that. You know, even you go to the Timonium sales grounds, the on the walls, the list of the horses that were sold there, and obviously Lexington. You know, I would get lost upstairs in the library up there looking at, you know, every blood horse since it began publishing. And I love our history. I mean, I think that people appreciate it. Like, I know every time we do like a little history piece or we do something, people come to me and they say, oh, I never knew that. It's really cool. And it feels like it kind of open up their mind and maybe whet their appetite a little bit. I think our history is so important. And, you know, obviously a place like Saratoga. Steve, I was a kid the first summer I got to go there for the whole summer. I was 15. I took my bicycle up and I would ride around. And I had read the book, the fictional biography of Man O' War, by Walter Farley, who wrote all the Black Stallion books.
Right.
And there was a passage in it about Sam Riddle in his home on Union Avenue regaling his guests with stories of Man O' War on their veranda. And I used to ride my bike up and down Union Avenue and around Saratoga, and I would go, man, I wonder if it was that house. I wonder if it was this house. You know, like in my imagination, right? Up until like 3 or 4 years ago, I never knew what house it is. You know where Brook Tavern is?
Yeah.
Okay, right across the street on the same side of Nelson, on the same side of Union, right across Nelson, the big house on the corner there, there's a plaque that says Summer Home of Sam Riddle, owner of Man O' War, And I never knew that there was a plaque there. One day I was walking by, I was like, oh, is that like a historical thing? And there it was, and I passed it for 40 years and didn't know it was that house.
That's very cool. It's been a long time since I've walked that section of, frankly, of Union. So I'll go look for that. I love it.
It's pretty cool. But Saratoga, you know, I mean, obviously the Racing Museum and Hall of Fame and the whole thing. It's just, you know, I love going up in the off season and I'll go to Clare Court, pay my respects to two horses that I rode that are there, obviously Four Star Dave and More Jane. And, you know, people leaving stuff, you know, leaving a flowers or a trinket or, you know, putting rocks on the headstone. Like, you know, the people of Saratoga love and appreciate the game. And you know, so it's fun to be up there and be in that atmosphere.
Well, and we will certainly chat plenty this summer. I've got, you know, one thing that is going to be different. I've got this new piece of equipment, Rich, so I can pretty much set up shop anywhere now. I've got, it's battery operated, 6 hours battery life, and it picks up off Wi-Fi, so I don't have to be tethered to that spot right there by the racing office. I'm sure I'll do a few, you know, plenty of mornings from right there, because that's a good place to do a show. But I can, we could do a visit from the Oklahoma. We could if I make arrangements with Shug, we could maybe have it that in the private kitchen there in the Phipps Barn. That would be a fun fun spot.
Well, you know what, this is a good segue, and I don't know if we got to wrap up.
No, you're fine. You can find top of the hour.
Okay, so I do history tours in Saratoga. And to benefit the TRF, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And they've auctioned off a bunch of them. I don't get involved in, you know, what the donation is, or, you know, obviously they were auction items that went for, I think one of them went for like $2,500, you know, but it's all for a good cause. But I'm already scheduled to do, I don't know, five or six during the meet. And I love doing them because I bring people to the, you know, people get lost. They think the Oklahoma track was where the first track was, but it wasn't. It was Horse Haven, the track that runs through the barn area that we actually used to gallop horses on, and it closed many years ago because it wasn't the safest. You know, a lot of, you know, car traffic and having to be held up to let horses gallop by and stuff. But, you know, take them there. Take them to the old Sanford Barns. Take them to what was the old King Ranch kitchen that anybody could go and have breakfast, you know, back in the day, and you know, some personal history, and it's such a good morning. It's so much fun. We spend an hour and a half. I bring people into the Silks room and explain everything there. And so if anybody's interested, of your listeners, of doing the history tour, contact Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, Kim Weir. I've actually got a landing page that I've got to send out that I keep forgetting. I just been so busy. So I don't get in to like all the logistics. They set it up. So if you want to go, set it up through TRF, and we'll spend a couple hours together one morning in Saratoga. It'll benefit a good cause, and I promise people will come away with a greater appreciation of the history of the place and have a good time.
Oh, that's fabulous. You know, I expect a few visits from Kim over the summer because TRF has plenty of activities, including the in August we'll have the barbecue at the barn, which has become a staple even during pandemic summer. There was a drive-by barbecue at the barn, so that's very cool. I'm glad it came up. I appreciate it. I'm going to lean on you for I've got about another, you know, 7, 8, 9 minutes. Going to lean on you for another one of your responsibilities and aptitudes. The July sale, Rich, starts tomorrow. Nicole Russo is going to join us either tomorrow or maybe with a recap on Wednesday. Nicole has been traveling over the weekend, so she's headed to the sale now. And for the the HORA portion today. But Rich, talk a little bit about the selection process that you've gotten involved in yourself. The New York Bred Catalog was waiting for us when we came back from vacation. I got the July sale as well. But talk about that experience and how distinguishing, how difficult it is to anticipate what a yearling is going to look like by the time they hit the ring in July or August.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Just full disclosure, I'm not with phasing anymore in a formal capacity.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, when I was there, and an incredible group of people, and Boy Browning, all of them just couldn't have treated me nicer. You know, the biggest thing I came away with when looking at young horses and seeing what really they emphasize is balance. Seeing, you know, a horse may not be in complete balance when they're younger, but you could see what they're going to kind of grow into, and all the pieces fit. Like, you want to see, the best way it was explained to me was, you want to see an athlete. When you walk up, your first, before you start picking every little thing apart, is seeing a balanced athlete. And it's uncanny to me how good they are at it. And I guess, you know, obviously experience over the years, you know, I've always looked at horses, but I didn't look at it through that prism. And then starting to look at them because of the things that would be pointed out to me, was a great learning experience. And now, you know, talking with my son Joseph, who's actually down there at the sale, he's in Lexington, working the sale. And, you know, he actually was the guy who bought Funny Guy's sister, who ran third the other day, Funny How, which I think is a clever name to play on Goodfellas, right? You know, seeing how those pieces fit, and, you know, you don't want to see disproportionate, you know, too long a back, too short a neck, too this. And that, to me, really simplified the idea of what's important looking at a young horse. But the team there is incredible. I mean, just being a fly on the wall, which I had an opportunity to be, and listen to the conversation amongst these ultimate professionals at it, was a great learning experience. But number one, the biggest thing before anything, bang, it's got to hit you. There's an athlete, there's a balance there.
One of the things, and this is, you know, I just had one conversation so far on the horseman front, recapping the weekend, but Kenny McPeak, and you know, Kenny's track record, obviously, of speculating and buying babies and, you know, then developing them, or, you know, having them end up, even if they end up elsewhere, it is really quite something. I mean, it's as good as anybody's, I imagine. But it's a particular skill, and you know, looking at weanlings and knowing where, you know, where they're going to grow, where it's going to come from, projecting it, you know, being able to see, you know, the shoulder and the hip and the angles, and you know, but you still have to be able to, you know, look at a horse that's one age and understand and in your mind's eye see what they're going to look like you know, months and months, or in some cases, you know, a year and a half, 2 years from now. And it's got to be, I suppose it can be taught, Rich, but there's got to be some innate, you know, natural ability to see that. I can't imagine it's something that's easily communicated and that people just pick up, you know, from book learning and even from instruction.
Well, I think it's a lot like, you know, listen, you can practice something your whole life, like golf, let's say, I'm just grabbing something. And if you don't have a natural aptitude for it, you're only going to get so good. You know, but if you already have that natural aptitude and then you hone that skill, of course, you're going to be great at it. And that's, I think, certainly a skill set with looking at horses. People have a vision. They could see, you know, it's like a crystal ball. They can see 3 months into the future, 6 months into the future, a year into the future of what this horse is going to blossom into. And, you know, I wish that I was a little sharper at it. I think that I've definitely gotten better because of being around people that have that, you know, innate ability like you're talking about. But it's fascinating. I mean, there's so many facets to the game that reach, you know, that have all these legs and spider out that I think the general public sometimes doesn't have a really good handle in all the jobs created, all the different, you know, kind of disciplines, and, you know, whether it's buying horses, selling horses, breaking horses, raising horses, foaling horses. I mean, it's an incredible industry that, you know, like me as a jockey, I scratched one surface. You know, then I got involved with the sales, scratched another surface. Now doing broadcasting, scratching another surface. But it's infinite almost.
Well, that's that experience is what makes you, you know, so much fun to talk to and listen to and sit down with. And we're going to do all of that as the summer unfolds. And
I got a real treat today, Steve. Lafitte Pink Eye and Terrence D.G., our producer, one of our producers, are stopping in Millbrook, and I'm taking them to lunch in my little town and showing them where I live, and I'm so excited to have them come up.
Where are you taking them? That's the most important question.
Well, you know, our options are limited on Mondays.
Monday,
Millbrook.
Yeah.
The Millbrook Diner is always open on Monday, so we'll probably just do that. But you know, just to get to show them, you know, like I always talk about where I live, they'll actually be able to really visualize it now.
Well, I anticipate that at some point too. I want to come down. In fact.
Well, actually, we got to do it in the fall.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And cook and just enjoy a day here. But we actually got some work going on in the house right now, and Carmela's going to kill me, I think, if I bring them here. So I might just meet them in town.
Well, we will look forward to seeing you on Thursday, Rich, and a terrific season at Belmont. But the summer, for no matter how good a season is at Belmont, spring or fall, people just the appetite for Saratoga is insatiable. It's amazing.
It truly is. And I found a place 200 yards from the paddock gate. I can walk to work. I'm so excited. Got some of the schedule, and I got you know, a good workload, and love the people I work with. Really, really looking forward to it.
Rich Migliori, everybody. Mig 4450 on your Twitter, and there during Saratoga live coverage, which starts on Thursday. And we'll do as many live visits with Mig as possible over the 7 weeks. And we also, Seth and I, I'll put the suggestion or the request in already. We got to get you on Loose on the Lead for at least one visit.
I'm a natural on Loose on the Lead. That was one of my strengths as a rider.
Well, and the show is a natural because we make sure we're hard and fast with the broadcast rules. You can probably get away with things that you don't get away with, or you wouldn't even think about trying on Saratoga Live.
Yeah, I'm a little more measured. Yeah, you know, I'm very candid on this segment.
Yes.
With your race. I probably say too much.
No, not at all. Everybody loves it. I did get an email. I'm seeing right here. Our friend Nick Cirillo. Nick says we should do the show from your place. One Monday. I'll drive down in the morning and do a show from the farm.
I that's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
We can set up even in the office in the barn or just out here. I've got benches around the property. But, yeah. How about the other night? I went to the back of the property. You know, I still got Jack on a leash, but I hadn't taken him out, thankfully. And I've been trapping these damn groundhogs. And, you know, humane traps, and then I drive them 20 miles up the Bull's Head Road and turn them loose, right? I got one in the trap. And I stand up, and a freaking black bear is 15, 20 feet from me, and we startled each other. He didn't see me. I didn't see him. And you want to talk about a jolt. Man. And he stood up, and I said, oh, no, is he going to, like, now he's going to charge me? So I hollered at him, and he wheeled, and he took off. He looked like he broke from the gate at Los Alamitos. but you want to talk about adrenaline rush.
Well, you and Bear Encounters. I think there's a children's book, Mig and the Bear. There's a children's book in the offing here.
Yeah, well, I'm the one I hit. I'm still worried he's going to send family after me.
Well, there you go. Your name does end in a vowel, so you're always eligible. Make sure you sit at the diner. Sit with your back to the wall. Don't.
That's funny. Steve, have a great day. I look forward to seeing you up there.
Rich Migliori, everybody, and we're going to get a full dose of Mig at the Spa. Days away as we get going. Top of hour three. The morning is whistling by. That's no surprise. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. Bill Gallo is going to hop the fence, and we're going to talk about the steeplechase season at the Flat Tracks at Colonial and Saratoga. They start today. We can't bet on it, though, which I'm not, not that happy about. But we'll see if there's anything in the offing on that front. I've also got, I posted it at Derby Trail last night, the details of some of the extra special wagering options this summer at Saratoga. I'll start to feed those out to you as well. Jessica Paquette is going to join us probably at about 25 minutes, all right, near the bottom of the hour. We'll get some handicapping done, and I see that Gus has handicapped the Colonial card, and I'll have at the website, we'll have Gus's plays for the Pick 5 today as well, and I got the PPs in front of me to walk through it with Jess. Opening day at Colonial, Saratoga days away, back home for the summer, at least until middle of next week when we'll head down to Monmouth and get abused by Andy. Back after this, hour three.
The latest racing news. It's